Well, this is that time of year. We're coming up on the Passover season, and this is the time that usually questions concerning practice, our practice as opposed to somebody else's practice, what the Jews do at this time of year, what we do, questions tend to come our way, and a lot of times controversy with the questions. And I know I've addressed this in the past. I'd like to address it again, talking about it again concerning the meaning of, for example, 14th day of the month, Ben Har Bi'im, between the evenings, what exactly that means and why we do what we do. This year, we have not received as many comments because people have been dealing with, things like COVID-19, ice storms, and other things apocalyptic in nature. So they haven't focused so much on this question. But it is a question that comes around on a regular basis every year, at least in some measure. So I'd like to address that. This is going to be the first part. The second part, while I deal more with the New Testament passages on this subject, will be done when I'm back here on the 20th. I'd like to begin in Leviticus, the 23rd chapter, so we can kind of define the issues. Leviticus chapter 23, of course, you know that this is where we find the full details or fairly extensive details on the list of the feasts of the Lord. The feast of the Lord, the appointed times, the designated times that God had for Israel in the Old Testament, and of course have very much New Covenant significance as well, as we all know. Leviticus 23, beginning in verse 1, the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the children of Israel, and say to them, these are the appointed feasts," that's the designated times, "these are the appointed feasts or designated of the Lord that you shall proclaim as holy convocations. They are my appointed feasts, my designated time." So these are times when the people would come together in holy convocations for special occasions. In some cases, it was to memorialize past events. In other cases, it was to celebrate the harvest that God had given them, and so on. So here you have the whole list, and it begins with the weekly feast of the Lord that we call the Sabbath day. In verse 3 it says, 6 days you shall work be done. This doesn't mean you have to work all six of those days. I've heard people talk about in the past, if you're really keeping the fourth commandment, then you have to work all six of those days and then keep the Sabbath, rest on the Sabbath day. But no, what the meaning is that God has given us 6 days in which our work can be done. We complete it during that period of time. If we take another day off, like many businesses are work 5 days a week, there's no problem with that. I mention that because that does come up occasionally as an objection. Anyway, 6 days shall work be done, and on the seventh day is a Sabbath of solemn rest, a holy convocation. You shall do no work. It is a Sabbath to the Lord in all your dwelling places. So it is the first of the feasts of the Lord, and it's listed first, I think, for an important reason. It's because this is the fourth commandment itself. And all 10 of the 10 commandments really represent 10 broad moral categories. And so here he's about to discuss a moral category having to do with sacred times set aside for the worship of God. Now, some people say, well, the Sabbath is only meant for rest, for physical rest, because you had an agrarian society working hard 6 days a week, and they needed that day of rest. No, that's only part of the story. I mean, it's very obvious. It's very obvious. You look at the wording of the commandment in Exodus 20 and in Deuteronomy 5. In Exodus 20, it's connected with the Creator. You're to remember who the Creator is. In Deuteronomy 5, you're to remember who the Redeemer is, because there it is connected with the Exodus. So God is Creator and Redeemer. He's to be honored as such on the Sabbath day. So it's not just a day for physical rest. It's also a day for spiritual rejuvenation. And so this establishes a moral category here. And then the scriptures that follow, the verses that follow, when you see the other feasts of the Lord described, the annual festivals, then they fall within that broad moral category. So I believe this is why the Sabbath is mentioned first here, because it establishes that category. And then we continue on in verse 4. So these are the appointed feasts of the Lord, the holy convocations, which you shall proclaim at the time appointed for them in the first month, on the 14th day of the month. Now here comes the controversy. Here comes the question that people often have. On the 14th day of the month, on the 14th day of the month, at twilight, this translation says. Some translations say at dusk. Other translations say at even or in the evening. And the Hebrew word here is, or the expression is, ben ha-arbim, literally means between the evenings. Between the evenings. The normal term for evening is erev. And so literally it means between the erevs. Now that's the question is, which erevs are you talking about? Some people say, well, it must be the erev or the evening that begins the day and the erev that begins the day. So why not? So why even say that? What's the point? I'll tell you, that's not what it means. It has reference to, and we'll get to this later, I'll show you the evidence for it, has reference to the end of the day, not the beginning, as we shall see. But in any case, this is the controversy. Now, I mention that because some people write, it's not uncommon for people to write and say, well, I looked at the calendar this year. I noticed that you're having your Passover, what you call the New Testament Passover, on this date, and yet the Jews are doing it the next day. What's that about? Are they wrong or are you wrong? And I say, no. They're not wrong and we're not either. Because actually what they call Passover really is what we call the night to be much observed. They have the Passover Seder. They don't actually eat a lamb. Most of them don't. Some of them, in fact, object to using a lamb because they understand that it is not lawful for them to sacrifice a Passover lamb because the temple is not standing, the Levitical priesthood is not in place, and there cannot be at that place, that one place you have to be in if you're going to sacrifice the Passover lamb. So what they have is the Seder service. It's a memorial service. It's what they do between now and such time that there will be a temple and they can go to Jerusalem and they can participate in the sacrifice of the Passover. Now, most Jews today, many Jews certainly don't have anything to do with that. They find animal sacrifice repugnant. They don't want, you know, a lot of people in Israel, some people assume that they're just on the verge of rebuilding the temple because you see some of these reports on the internet and it looks like, oh, this temple society or whatever it's called, it looks like they're really making some progress now, and soon the temple is going to be rebuilt. But do you know how many people there absolutely find totally repugnant the idea of offering animal sacrifices to a god? A lot of those people there are atheists. It's a secular society. You have the religious element there for sure. Oh yeah, you have those there, the Orthodox Jews, who would love to have the temple standing, but boy, are they going to have opposition in getting that done. But I'll tell you this, some people ask concerning the 14th day, so why do they just ignore it? Jews just ignore the 14th altogether, and what they do, their Seder service is in the night of the 15th. And I say, listen, if they did have a temple, and if this were going on in Jerusalem, you can rest assured that the 14th day would be of huge importance to them, because that's when the sacrifices would be taking place. But in any case, it goes on to say here, and on the 15th day of the same month is the Feast of Unleavened Bread to the Lord. For 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. On the first day you shall have a holy convocation. It's an annual Sabbath. You shall not do any ordinary work, but you will present a food offering to the Lord for 7 days. On the seventh day is the holy convocation. You shall not do any ordinary work. So you have the two Sabbaths, the two annual Sabbaths in the Feast of Unleavened Bread. And this is the description of it here. So again, I want to emphasize, though, this expression in the first month on the 14th day of the month, ben ha-arbim, between the evenings, is the Lord's Passover. You notice it does not say the name of the 14th day is the Lord's Passover. No, the Lord's Passover is something that occurs on the 14th, but a specific time on the 14th, and that time is called Ben Harabim, or between the two evenings, or simply between the evenings. Again, the question is, when is that? Now, in the old days, and in some of the Church of God groups today, some of the Sabbath-keeping and Holy Day-observing groups, it is believed that this is the beginning of the 14th day of Abib, or Nisan. This is the beginning of the 14th. It's that narrow window of time right at the beginning of the 14th, from sunset until dark, the time we call twilight or dusk, right at the beginning of the 14th. But is that what it's talking about? I'll show you why it cannot be. Others say it's at the end of the 14th. Now I'll say this. I'll get a little bit ahead of myself here. But even if the original meaning is that period, refers to that period of dusk or twilight, as this translation uses the word twilight, even if that's the case, the question still remains. Does that mean then that whatever is supposed to take place here, which it's a sacrifice, cannot begin before that period called twilight? Can you, in other words, can you back it up a little bit? Can you move it back earlier in the 14th to make it into the latter part of the 14th? What they were doing, according to Alfred Edersheim in his book on the temple and its services, he says that the Jews in the time of Jesus in the Second Temple period actually offered the sacrifice of the Passover at about 3 p.m. That normally that was the time of the Erev sacrifice, the evening, or the Ben Harabim sacrifice. We'll look at that in a few moments. But it was the time of the evening sacrifice. But on that day, on the 14th, they moved that up to 2 o'clock, so that the Passover could be offered beginning at 3 o'clock. But you understand that the Passover sacrifice didn't just take place at one little narrow moment in time. Because there was a lot of, there were thousands of them that were brought to the temple, offered there. That blood had to go on that one altar. Wasn't offered domestically, various places, as the original Passover in Egypt was. But this was offered on that one altar, so they had to have a few hours there to get all of that done. And they did it very methodically and very rapidly, and they were able to get it done over that period of a few hours in the afternoon of the 14th. So the question is, were they right? Many people say, no, the Jews were wrong. They had it wrong all that time. If you go back to the Old Testament, you look at the reformer kings such as Hezekiah and Josiah, you find indeed that they had a sanctuary-centered Passover sacrifice. Some people take exception to that, and they claim, well, they were wrong. Yes, they were righteous kings. They were trying to do right, but they instituted that kind of Passover in order to establish some kind of controls for the people. And yet, it tells you in the text that they did it according to the law of Moses. If they did it according to the law of Moses, then it would seem to me that the sacrifice of the Passover is a sanctuary-centered sacrifice. I'm going to show you it is. It was, even from the time after the original, it was from the first time Israel observed it in the wilderness, it was a sanctuary-centered sacrifice. But let's move on from here and go back to Exodus 12. And otherwise we'll have to extend this for three parts, and we don't have time between now and Passover. But anyway, Exodus 12. So let's look at the original. I think we can learn something from the original instructions here. Exodus chapter 12. We'll begin in verse 1. The Lord said to Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt, "This month shall be to you the beginning of months. It shall be the first month of the year for you." Now, the implication here is that they already had a calendar in place. They're already familiar with a calendrical system. But now God is telling them, now this month, one that you're already familiar with, is going to be the beginning of months for you. And he tells them why. Because something very special is going to happen this month. "Tell all the congregation of Israel that on the 10th day of this month, every man shall take a lamb according to their father's houses, a lamb for a household. And if the household is too small for a lamb, then he and his nearest neighbor shall take according to the number of persons, according to each what each can eat. You shall make your count for the lamb. Your lamb shall be without blemish, a male of a year old. Now, you can see the symbolism in this right away. We understand Christ, our Passover sacrifice for us. You see the lamb without blemish. You see the significance of this as far as foreshadowing Christ as our Passover. Your lamb shall be without blemish, a male of a year old. You may take it from the sheep or from the goats, and you shall keep it until the 14th day of the first month, when the whole assembly of the congregation of Israel shall kill their lambs. Here it is, Ben Ha'arbim. Between the evenings. Now what happens between the evenings? Other places, as we shall see, tells you you're to keep the Passover at this time on the 14th day, Ben Ha'arbim, or between the evenings. Here we're told exactly what they were to do at this period of time on the 14th, Ben Ha'arbim. It says you shall kill your lambs. So what does it mean to keep the Passover at Ben Ha'arbim? It means to sacrifice your lambs. So this is talking about a sacrificial rite. And without the sacrificial rite, you really don't have a Passover. You may have a Seder service, but you don't have a Passover. So this is the basic instruction here, but he goes on, says, then they shall take some of the blood and put it on the two doorposts and the lintel of their houses in which they eat it. They shall eat the flesh. Now get this, that night. Now if Ben Ha'arbim refers to the end of the 14th day, then what is that night? Would be the night which begins the 15th, right? Yes. They shall eat the flesh that night, roasted on the fire with unleavened bread. That might be a hint right there. And bitter herbs, they shall eat it. Do not eat any of it raw or boiled in water, and so on. Goes on to give the instructions. Verse 11, in the manner you shall eat it, with your belt fastened. Now notice this, your belt fastened, your sandals on your feet, and your staff in your hand, and you shall eat it very slowly because you're going to wait around for a whole day. No, you're going to eat it. You shall eat it in haste. It is the Lord's Passover, for I will pass through the land of Egypt that night, and I will strike all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both men and beast, and of all the gods of Egypt I will execute judgments. I am Yahweh. The blood shall be a sign for you on the houses where you are, and when I see the blood, I will pass over you. Hence the name Passover. That's why the statutory Passover that would be observed later is called the Passover, the Lord's Passover, because it reflects back, it memorializes this event. And no plague will befall you to destroy you when I strike the land of Egypt. This day, what day? Notice what he just has said. The day in which he passes over, in which the plague befalls Egypt, when he strikes the land, this day shall be for you a memorial day, and you shall keep it a feast to the Lord throughout your generations. So it's talking about the same time. Whatever day that was on which God passed over the houses of the Israelites with the blood marking their houses, then that's the day he's talking about. This day shall be for you a memorial day, and you shall keep it as a feast to the Lord throughout your generations, as a statute forever, and you shall keep it a feast. 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. He goes on to explain that. Let me drop on down to verse 17. And you shall observe the feast of unleavened bread for, now here's the expression again, on this very day I brought your hosts out of the land of Egypt, therefore you shall observe this day throughout your generations as a statute forever. Now it doesn't sound to me like he's talking about two different days here. This day that you're to observe, being the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, is the day on which the Lord passed over. It's the day which he struck the firstborn in Egypt. It's the day that the Israelites were released from Egyptian bondage. Of course, this happened in the nighttime. Pharaoh's decree came out to them. It was during the night period of that day, the 15th. the 15th. We shall see that that's the case. Now, the advocates of the early 14th would say, no, this all happened in the 14th. And then they say, because the Israel had too much to do before the Exodus could begin. And the argument is this, that when death passed over in the beginning, in the night of the 14th, the next day they had to have time to burn the remains. They had to have time to collect Joseph's bones, because we're told that they took Joseph's remains with them. They had to have time to assemble themselves and get organized. They had to spoil the Egyptians. And then they had to go about 5 to 10 miles away from their home in Goshen to a supply city called Ramesses. Is that true? They had to do all this stuff. And then when they got there, they organized themselves very carefully, got themselves as in a military units, as in military units. And they then, when nightfall came, beginning of the 15th, they marched out with a high hand. Really? Really? So what was all this with your belt on your, fastened and your sandals on your feet and your staff in your hand? You get the impression from that that they're going to have to move out in a hurry, don't you? And of course, that's what happened. They were forced out, as we shall see. He goes on to say, in verse 18, and this is important. If you want to know what the term Erev refers to, I think this is a key scripture right here. In the first month, from the 14th day, there's that term again, 14th day of the month at evening. This is not Ben-Harvim here, this is Erev. From the 14th day of the month at evening, is that the beginning of the 14th? I'll show you, it cannot possibly be. It is the end of the 14th. And what happens when the 14th ends? Guess what begins? 15th. There's a mathematician here on the front row. From the 14th day of the month at evening you shall eat unleavened bread until the 21st day. That's a total of 7 days there, isn't it? 14th at evening begins the 15th until the 21st day of the month at evening. So that's the end of the 21st, isn't it? Not the beginning. I've actually had people argue that it was, but no, it's not. It's clearly because it goes on to say for 7 days. Count it. 15 to 21, that's 7, isn't it? So 14th day at evening clearly means end of the 14th, and the point at which the 15th begins. 7 days no leaven is to be found in your houses. If anyone eats what is leavened, that person will be cut off from the congregation of Israel, whether he is a sojourner or a native in the land. So even those Gentiles who were sojourning among the Israelites, they had to clean out the leavening as well. You shall eat nothing leavened in all your dwelling places. You shall eat unleavened bread. Now I want to go to another scripture, but before we do, to show you where this what it means when you speak of a given day of the month followed by at evening. But before we go over there, we'll go back to Leviticus 23. I want to read something else in chapter 12 here. Let's skip on over to verse 33. It says, the Egyptians were urgent with the people to send them out of the land. What were they saying? Y'all stay around. Yeah. No, they wanted them out. Why do they want them out? Because they were tired of dying. They were tired of the plagues. They knew that their being there was the cause of the plagues, and Pharaoh's not letting them go was bringing disaster to them. So the Egyptians were urgent with the people to send them out of the land in haste, for they said, we shall all be dead. So the people took their dough, this is the people of Israel, took their dough before it was leavened. In other words, it's later called the bread of haste. Do you see why? Because they got to get it out, they got to go before they had time to go through the leavening process. So they took their dough before it was leavened, their kneading bowls being bound up in their cloaks on their shoulders. The people of Israel had also done as Moses told them, for they had, now the King James Version might be translated differently, they had asked the Egyptians for silver and gold and jewelry and clothing. And the Lord had given the people favor in the sight of the Egyptians. You know, one of the arguments for the early 14th proponents have is that, well, they had to have time to spoil the Egyptians. When are they going to do this? Well, they did it already before the 10th plague. You read about it in the back in Exodus 11. For sake of time, we won't go there. But read about it. It's already done. So they didn't spoil the Egyptians when they went out. It's already a done deal. And as far as collecting Joseph's bones, you mean to tell me they didn't know already that they were to take Joseph's bones with them? That nobody knew about that? Of course they did. And they had to go to some supply city and organize themselves. How'd they get there? They didn't know how to organize themselves. Just run out and say, where are we going? That way. No. They organized themselves while they were in Goshen, which, by the way, is Ramses. They didn't have to flee and go to some supply city in order to organize themselves. You know, the assumption is that they didn't know how to organize themselves. And yet, when you read all the accounts from Exodus, Deuteronomy, Numbers, and so on, of the children of Israel, their experience in the wilderness and so on, you see right away in the wilderness, they knew, they never lost their tribal distinctions. They knew exactly which tribe they belonged to. So it's not like as slaves in Egypt that they just lost their identity. No, they maintained their tribal distinctions, and without a doubt, they even had banners that represented those tribes even before they got into the wilderness. And I would say that with the horns they used, the trumpet sounds that they used, they knew how to assemble themselves. On day one, they have to go up to some supply city someplace and then figure out how they're going to get organized. You know, after spoiling the Egyptians, collecting Joseph's bones, and doing all the other things that they were allegedly had to do, which they didn't have to do any of those things beforehand. Those things were done. And they were ready to go. That's why they had the staff in their hand, the shoes on their feet, and they bound up the unleavened dough in their cloaks to take with them. They had to get out in a hurry. So, we go on, let's continue on here, verse 37, and the people of Israel journeyed from Ramses. Again, Ramses, this is where they were. This is the starting point. Some people argue, say, no. They left Goshen and went up to Ramses. Well, all you have to do is check back in the time when Jacob and his sons settled in Egypt. And we're told that they're, back in the book of Genesis, they settled the choicest part of the land. It was called Goshen, and it's also referred to there in that same chapter as Ramses. Now, this would have been, no doubt, but in the time of Joseph, it wouldn't have been called Ramses at that point. But this is because it was called Ramses because this is a later edit in order to show later readers exactly where they were talking about. So now then, at this point, though, it is called Ramses. There's a lot of places called Ramses or Ramesses or something similar to Ramses simply because they had such a humble pharaoh that wanted to name everything after himself. So it says, the people of Israel journeyed from Ramses to Sukkoth, about 600,000. Now, there may be a translational issue here, but in any case, 600,000 men on foot. This would denote males of military age. There are a lot of others as well, but 600,000 men on foot, besides women and children. A mixed multitude also went up with them, and very much livestock, both flocks and herds. So that's a lot of people and animals to begin moving. Regardless of the translational issues, I don't know if the numbers are really as great as we have thought in times past, but nevertheless, it's still a lot of people. They'd been there for quite a while in Egypt, and there were lots of children and grandchildren, lots of old people, young people, all kinds of people, and plenty of animals as well. So it says, they baked unleavened cakes of the dough that they had brought out of Egypt, for it was not leavened because they were thrust out of Egypt. You know, actually the truth is they were still technically in Egypt. But this means they were thrust out of their homes in Egypt. Now the journey had begun. Now they're on their way out of Egypt. And could not wait, nor had they prepared any provisions for themselves. So much for that extra day that they needed to do all these things for their provisions. Okay, so you have. I wanted to go back now to I mentioned earlier when back in verse 18, the first day from the 14th of the month at evening, to the 21st at evening, showing this is the end of the day, not the beginning. I want you to also notice Leviticus chapter 23, see what it says about the Day of Atonement. It says in verse 26, "And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, Now on the 10th day of the 7th month," is the Day of Atonement, "the 10th day of the 7th month." Now what day of the month? Which month? 7th month? What day of the month does this fall on? What day of the month is the Day of Atonement? Nobody knows. It's the 10th day, isn't it? It says the 10th day of this 7th month. That's when the Day of Atonement is, the 10th day. Now he goes on to give some instructions here, and then drop on down to verse 32. "It shall be to you a Sabbath of solemn rest, and you shall afflict yourselves." This is understood to mean fasting. Get this now. We've established this on the 10th day, right? Notice what it says. "On the 9th day of the month, at evening," or beginning at evening, Erev is the word, "from evening to evening shall you keep yourself." It's the 9th day, Erev, at Erev. The 9th day of the month in the evening. Is this talking about the beginning of the 19th? I'm sorry, the 9th? I hope not. You're going to have 2 days of fasting there. No, the 9th day of the month, beginning at evening, the way this translation puts it. That means the end of the 9th. That's when the Day of Atonement begins. And guess what happens as soon as the 9th ends? The 10th begins. The mathematician comes through once again. And then it says, from evening to evening, from one Erev to the next Erev. It's very clear, isn't it? So this expression, when you have a month, a day of a month referred to, followed by at Erev, it means the end, not the beginning. Generally speaking, there may be an exception to that, but generally speaking, that's the rule. That's what you find over and over here. From evening to evening shall you keep your Sabbath, meaning the Day of Atonement. Now then, concerning the expression Benha Arbim, or between the Erevs, between the evenings, let's look over to Exodus 29. Go back, to Exodus chapter 29. Again, the question is this. We can see that the term Erev, like you say, the 14th day of the first month at Erev, Ba Erev is the Hebrew. That means the end of the 14th, just as 21st day of the month at Erev, or Ba Erev, means the end of the 21st, and 9th day at Erev, or in Erev, means the end of the 9th day, which begins the 10th. So what about this other expression, though, between the Erevs, or Ben Harbiim, as it is in the Hebrew, between the evenings? Well, let's look over here to Exodus chapter 30, and or we're in 29, I'm sorry. 29, Exodus 29, and verse 38. "Now this is what you shall offer on the altar." Now this is talking about the daily sacrifices. There are two daily sacrifices. "Two lambs a year old." Notice it says day by day. That means every day. You don't skip any day, including the Sabbath. This is to be offered day by day, regularly, perpetually. It goes on and on. As long as you have the sanctuary, as long as you have a functional priesthood, it's to be offered daily, these two lambs. "One lamb you shall offer in the morning." You have any idea when the morning is? It's in the morning. Yeah, it's in the morning. "And the other lamb you shall offer Ben Ha'arbim, between the two evenings." Now notice this. "And with the first lamb," okay, this is talking about the first lamb of any given day. If the first lamb is in the morning, then the second lamb of the same day must be in the same day, right? Not the next day. So then if the second lamb is offered Ben Harbiim between the evenings, then what does between the evenings mean? It's at least toward the end of the day, right? Of course. So, and with the first lamb, a tenth, it just tells the things that are offered with it. Verse 41, the other lamb you shall offer, ben harbim, between the evenings, and shall offer with it a grain offering and so forth. So you have the two daily sacrifices, the two lambs, every day, perpetually. And the first one is offered in the morning, and the second is offered between the evenings, which means that tells us then that between the evenings must refer to the latter part of the same day. Okay? Now then, when you have the expression on the 14th day, Ben Harbim, in reference to the Passover sacrifice, then when do you think that sacrifice is to occur? Obviously, the end of that period, not at the beginning. That would be the normal way of understanding it if you were a Hebrew living in that period. It would be the end of that period. Now, again, the question is, though, do you have to wait till sunset? Or does Erev and Ben Harbim, does that possibly include the latter part of the day even before the sun is set? I won't refer you to any specific scriptures this week. Maybe we'll get to them next week. But mostly I want to focus on the New Testament, not next week, next time I'm here. I want to focus on the New Testament next time. But there are several passages in the Old Testament that indicates that this expression Erev is used in reference to the latter part of the day, even before the sun is set. And it seems that the Jews understood this when they had the Passover sacrifice begin in the afternoon of the 14th. It had to be all done they wanted it done by nightfall. Because there's a whole lot to cook in those things. 4 or 5 hours for one lamb. You know, I asked that question to Ben Sadaka. Do you know who Ben Sadaka is? Have you ever heard of him? He's the guy who translated the Samaritan scriptures. He's a Samaritan. And by the way, the Samaritans are still offering the sacrifice on Mount Gerizim. They still do it, the Passover sacrifice. Now, they have their own calendar system, and yet they use this. They understand. But I asked him the meaning of this expression, Ben Harbim. Now, he says it means, it means between the sunsets. I said, so when do you... this is by way of an email exchange. And he says, I asked him, when did they do that? They normally... And remember, they only have just a tiny few lambs to offer. There's just a few of them, relatively speaking. And the high priest does it on Mount Gerizim. And then it's an all-night affair. It goes on all night. They're worn out by the next morning. But he says they offer it as the sun is going down, right at sunset, on the 14th. At the end of the 14th, not beginning. But then he says, when the 14th falls on a Friday, then that means at sunset the Sabbath begins. So what do they do then? They back it up to about noon. They begin it at noon so there won't be so much work on the Sabbath. Because it takes hours to do that, and they only have a few lambs. And so anyway, that's what he told me. So it's been their understanding, the Samaritans' understanding, and by the way, they are Israelites. The DNA shows it. They are. They're kin to, they're related to the Jews there in the land. They know that's their relatives. They admit it. They say it. They don't deny it. But anyway, they've been, since time immemorial, that's been their understanding. And so I would say they and the Jews have the correct understanding as far as this expression. And they understand it can take in a portion of the latter of that day, the 14th, while the sun is still up. In fact, as you know, sundown, what does that mean after all? We think of sundown as sunset, but actually when you see the sun midday, it starts, from our perspective, it looks like it's dropping toward the horizon, doesn't it? It's sundown is beginning to take place. So that's the way it was understood, and I believe they're correct. I believe that fits with everything we see in Scripture. Now then, So with that in mind, see where we want to go next with that. But this is without a doubt the correct view of that. I wanted to go to Numbers chapter 9. Numbers, the ninth chapter. Sorry, not Numbers 9. Numbers 33. We've already been to Numbers 9. But Numbers 9 is where we talked about... Actually, no. We haven't been to Numbers 9 yet. Numbers 9 is where I want to go next, and then we'll go to Numbers 33. We could take either one of them. It doesn't matter which order you put these in, but I want to make the case here in Numbers 9 to show you that this was not a domestic sacrifice. Meaning, some of you may have heard sermons in the past or read articles or whatever from people talking about trying to recreate what it must have been like in ancient times when the families got together for the Passover, and how they came to Jerusalem and set up their tents, all scattered all over the place, I guess, as long as in Jerusalem. And you had each family had its lamb, and the father, of course, went out and slit the animal's throat at the appointed time, right as the sun began to set on the beginning of the 14th. That's the way the story was told. And they explained to the little kiddies what happened in the night when the Exodus took place, or when death passed over. So the idea you get there is they killed the lamb, poured its blood out right there on the ground, and then prepared it as according to the instructions in the law. They prepared the lamb, and then later that night they all sat around their individual campfires, told the children the story of the Exodus, and so on. But you know, that never happened that way. It was not a domestic sacrifice. Absolutely not. See, what people do, they look at how it happened in Egypt. But Egypt was the original event. The statutory Passover is a memorial of that event. And it is a statutory Passover sacrifice, and it was brought to the tabernacle. Now some would tell you, said, no, that's a practice that started later. It's not what was in God's original instructions. And not to that I say, yes, it was. Yes, it was. The very first Passover recorded in Scripture after Egypt was a sanctuary-centered Passover. You see it here in Numbers chapter 9. First of all, I'll just mention that leading up to chapter 9, you see that the tabernacle had just been constructed, the priesthood had been set apart, and now they were ready to begin their work of sacrifice. Now here's what happens in chapter 9. And the Lord spoke to Moses in the wilderness of Sinai in the first month of the second year after they had come out of the land of Egypt. Now they're going to have this in the wilderness. They're not yet in the land. This is in the time of Moses, not in the time of Josiah, or not in the time of any later period when the temple was standing in Jerusalem. It says, in the first month of the second year, well, we've already read that saying, let the people of Israel keep the Passover at its appointed time. Now here it is. He repeats the appointed time. On the 14th day of this month, that'd be the first month, at, this translation says twilight, it's the same expression, Ben Ha Arbiim, between the evenings, you shall keep it at its appointed time according to all its statutes and all its rules, you shall keep it. Now again, we read back in Exodus 12 what happened, Ben Ha Arbiim, between the evenings. They killed the lamb. So what does it mean here? It says you are to keep it on the 14th day, Ben Ha Arbiim. You're to kill it at that time. This is a sacrificial rite. That's what he's talking about. According to all the statutes and all its rules, you shall keep it. So Moses told the people of Israel that they should keep the Passover, and they kept the Passover in the first month, on the 14th day of the month, between the evenings, Ben Ha Arbiim, in the wilderness of Sinai, according to all that the Lord commanded Moses, so the people of Israel did. Now again, this is Moses. This is not Josiah. This is not a later reformer king. It is Moses himself. The Lord told Moses how to do this. Let's look at some details that come up along the way as we read through this. And there were certain men who were unclean through touching a dead body. Now, as far as I know, it didn't matter about this if you were in Egypt. You may have buried your father that day when the death angel was going to come through that night. And you may have touched a dead body. You may have picked up an unclean dead body, some kind of carcass of some unclean animal or something. Does that mean, I'm firstborn too? Would you be in danger? No, because there is nothing there that tells you couldn't do it anyway. You couldn't kill the lamb and put it on the doorpost and lintels of your home. See, this is something that's fundamentally different here. Now then, the statutory Passover looks back at that event. As far as I know, the best I can tell, you didn't have to be, if you were a male in Egypt, a Hebrew male, and you weren't circumcised, or as far as that goes, even if you were an Egyptian and you weren't circumcised, if you put the blood of that lamb on the doorpost and lintels, you're protected. Your firstborn is protected. Had nothing to do with whether you're circumcised or not. But now in the statutory Passover, you'd better be, or it was forbidden for you to take it. So it says these certain men who were unclean through touching a dead body, so that they could not keep the Passover on that day. You see what's going on here? Now, if they were just out there in their tents away from Moses and anybody else, why couldn't they just kill a lamb? They could. Could say, "Hey, we're keeping the Passover." Who's going to stop them? You read this, you realize somebody stopped them. Somebody prevented them from eating the Passover, from keeping the Passover. Let's read on. So that they could not keep the Passover on that day, and they came before Moses and Aaron on that day, and those men said to him, "We are unclean through touching a dead body. Why are we kept from, to get this, bringing the Lord's offering?" Bring it? What do you mean, bring it? They just killed it out there next to your tent. Bringing it? You know what he's talking about? Look at the context. Bringing it to the sanctuary where it was offered. It's the Lord's offering. You don't bring just a meal that you're going to kill and eat out there someplace. They're bringing the Lord's offering. He's talking about the Passover. At its appointed time among the people of Israel. And Moses said to them, "Wait, that I may hear what the Lord will command concerning you." And then he gives the instructions concerning, in such cases, a person who is unclean by reason of a dead body or is on a journey. So that's another thing. Why not just keep it? If you're on a journey, why not just keep it wherever you are? Now, you can't do that. Then they can do that in the second month. That's the instructions. That's what God tells Moses. Let's just skip on down to verse 13. "But if anyone who is clean and is not on a journey fails to keep the Passover, that person shall be cut off from his people because he did not bring the Lord's offering at its appointed time." You get it? Bring the Lord's offering. This is not a domestic Passover, something you kill out there and let the blood run into the ground and then prepare it and eat it. No, this is brought to the sanctuary, offered to God. The Passover sacrifice after Egypt was just like any other sacrifice. You couldn't offer them anywhere. They had to be brought to the sanctuary. The blood was placed on that altar. Now, I want you to think about this for a while. God said that he would told Israel if they would keep his covenant, if they would obey his law, that he would bless and multiply them. Now, when they came out of Egypt, there's a pretty good crowd there already. Pretty good crowd. Now, they get into the land. Suppose they were obedient. Then God would fulfill his promise. He would bless them in every way, including in childbearing, and the nation would grow extremely large compared to what it was at one time. Now, what are you going to do when it comes time to bring the sacrifice of the Passover to the altar, that one altar at the sanctuary, if in fact it's to be offered in that narrow window of time at the beginning of the 14th. You got a problem. Got a problem. Because how many thousands? I mean, I don't know how many. It could have run into the millions, possibly. But one per household. Say if it's one lamb for every 10 people, and you got millions of people, you got a bunch of lambs being brought there. That means somebody's got to get busy. And it's going to be a pretty much a full day. They've got to get busy and do the work. And you see that happening in the time of Josiah. In fact, it says that they offered so many, had so many animals that were brought to the temple and were offered there, the priests were still working into the night. That tells you that they started in the afternoon of the 14th. Not in the beginning of the 14th. But anyway, so you have this, and this is shown in the details here in Numbers, the 9th chapter. When you start reading about the second Passover, you look at those details. They brought their sacrifice to the Lord. It was the Lord's offering. So it was like all the other, like the sin offering and all the other sacrifices, it was brought to the sanctuary. So who authorized the sanctuary-centered Passover? Someone tell you later people did that. No, I say God did it through Moses. And Josiah, Hezekiah, the other kings were right in following that instruction. They were following God's instructions. Now that I want to go to Numbers 33, and I think this will be the last one for this particular message. I think, let's see. No, I'll have one more after this one. But we won't read the whole account here. But here, if you want to see the sequence of events from the Exodus, from leaving Egypt, and on the way, then just read this chapter here. Numbers 33, I'll begin in verse 1. We'll read a few verses, not the whole thing. It says, these are the stages of the people of Israel when they went out of the land of Egypt by their companies under the leadership of Moses and Aaron. So this is not... There's no metaphor in this. This is a statement, a chronological statement here. This is the chronology of events as they happen. That's what he's telling us. Moses wrote down their starting places, stage by stage, by command of the Lord, and these are their stages according to their starting places. Can it be any clearer than that? This is chronology. They set out from, where did they set out from? Ramses, a place in Egypt, of course. Yeah, they set out from Egypt. They set out from Ramses. And where was Ramses? Well, just hold your place there for a minute. Let's go ahead and look at this back in chapter 47 of Genesis 47. Won't take but a moment to do this. Genesis 47. Again, I bring this out because the argument is, some have made, the Ramses was a supply city that was about 5 or 10 miles away from Goshen. So they had to go from Goshen on the 14th and get to the supply city. That's where they organized themselves. And then they didn't leave until nightfall on the 15th. But I want you to look at again at Genesis 47. And we will see what was told to Joseph when his brothers and his father made their way to Egypt. Genesis 47, let's just look at, break into the context here in verse 6. It says, the land of Egypt is before you. Settle your father and your brothers in the best of the land. Let them settle in the land of Goshen. Where did they settle? Land of Goshen. Okay? And if you know any able men among them, put them in charge of my livestock. Drop on down to verse 11. Then Joseph settled his father and his brothers and gave them a possession in the land of Egypt in the best of the land. That would be Goshen. But notice what it's called here. In the land of Ramses, as Pharaoh had commanded. So did they have to leave Goshen to get to Ramses? No. Goshen was Ramses. They're in the same place. The fact that this says Ramses here, It may reflect a later edit because the people, whoever, whether it was Ezra or whomever, wanted the people who were reading it at their time to understand where this was, so they could kind of get a picture of what's going on here. So they set out from Ramses back in Numbers 33 in the first month, on the 15th day of the first month. You get that? When did they leave? 15th day of the first month. On the day after the Passover. Now, some people get all confused on this. I actually had a pretty lively discussion with someone on this particular topic. I said, look, day after the 14th is the 15th. So if the Passover is in the night of the 14th, then they left on the 5th. That means the next night. They went out by night, as it says in Deuteronomy 16. What does this expression, the day after, mean? It doesn't mean the next calendar date. Look through Scripture, you'll find it used elsewhere. Sometimes in the King James, it's the morrow after. You know, when you have an afternoon or nighttime event, and you say the day after that event, you're talking about the next daylight period. So it says they set out from Ramses in the first month, on the 15th day of the month, and it was the day after the Passover. In other words, they left on the morning of the 15th, not over at night. Now, we'll look at Deuteronomy 16 in a minute and say, what does it mean they came out by night? We'll look at that in just a moment. On the day after the Passover, the people of Israel went out triumphantly, now get this, in the sight of all the Egyptians. Was that at nighttime? I don't think so. And notice what they were doing, what the Egyptians were doing. While the Egyptians were burying all their firstborn, did they do that night? Don't think so. Whom the Lord had struck down among them, on their gods also, and the Lord executed judgments. So the people of Israel set out from Ramses and camped at Succoth. And it goes on to tell you the rest of the story all the way to the passage through the Red Sea, or the Sea of Reeds. So, they very clearly left on the morrow, that's the daylight portion, after the Passover. The Passover had taken place the previous evening, previous day, at 14th, at the end of the day. They had the meal that night, beginning of the 15th. And now the next morning, in the sight of the Egyptians, they leave as the Egyptians are burying their dead. Now, I'm sure this is guesswork on my part, but we know that the Egyptians had advanced methods of dealing. Morticians do it. Embalming. Embalming techniques. They did that. The rich Egyptians did, because they made the mummy. You know, we have remains of mummies, and they're very well preserved. I don't think that was the case with the poor Egyptians, though. And given the climate of Egypt, pretty hot there, pretty warm. Springtime was there, and it was pretty warm, no doubt. What do you think they're going to do with their dead if they can't embalm them like the rich ones can? They'll start burying them pretty quickly, won't they? So it says that they went out in the sight of the Egyptians. I don't think the Egyptians got up that same night, the night of terror, and started burying their dead. It was the next day, the daylight portion of the 15th, when they began to... And Israel was leaving at that point. Now then, but that leaves the question, what about Deuteronomy 16, where it does seem to say that they left at night? Or does it say that? Let's look at it. Deuteronomy chapter 16, verse 1. Observe the month of Abib and keep the Passover to the Lord your God, for in the month of Abib the Lord your God brought you out of Egypt by night. Okay, so what do we do with that? It seems to, in Numbers, this passage we just read from Numbers 33, it seems to suggest that they went out in the daytime. It says here they were brought out by night. Well, there's at least three different ways you can, three or four different ways you can interpret this. First of all, what does it mean when God brought them out? Does it mean he literally brought them out? Remember, he uses the same expression, I brought you out of the land of Egypt on this day, and knowing that several days later they were still in Egypt. Well, it means they began the journey that day. Okay? And when did they begin the journey? In the night that the Pharaoh said, you're out of here. The night he released the people. Now, some would come back and say, now, wait a minute. No, they couldn't have left before sunup, because God said nobody's to step outside your door, outside your front door or your, you know, outside your dwelling until sunrise. That night, the night of terror, don't you go out there. But, you know, okay, that's a fundamentalist approach. That's the way a fundamentalist would read it. But does that mean under any circumstances? What if the danger had passed and the Pharaoh's decree had already come down and it was still nighttime and he was saying, you get out and get out now? He might have sent some armed people there to tell them to move it along. I don't know about that, but nevertheless, he did send word to them by way of Moses and Aaron. He sent word to them to leave. So were they violating God's commandment by going out if they went out while it was still dark, even though the death angel had already passed through? Some people say, yep. The law is the law of the law. God says, don't do it, no matter what, no matter the circumstances. Well, I don't agree with that approach at all. But nevertheless, let's just take that. Let's just assume that's the case. Let's suppose they didn't start their journey before sunup. Okay? On the 15th. Let's just assume that. Let's assume they waited until sunup before they began. Then what does this brought you out of Egypt by night mean? Well, again, it could just simply mean that he caused Pharaoh to issue the decree at night, which that's true. And that counts as, that's considered to be the beginning of the journey, even though the journey didn't technically, officially, formally begin until the next morning. That's a possibility. Another possibility, for those of us who insist on a fundamentalist type approach, another possibility is he's talking about the crossing of the sea. They were, you know, technically they were still in Egypt. They were on the edge of the wilderness, but Egypt was breathing down their necks. Pharaoh's armies were there, ready to destroy them. And God caused the wind to blow on the sea all night, as they passed from the power of Egypt into the wilderness. And then when Pharaoh's armies pursued them, the sea closed up on them. Two-sided tsunami. So you could take it that way. He brought them literally out of Egypt, out of Pharaoh's domain, because Pharaoh's army was right there by night through the Red Sea. So there are different ways to understand this without contradicting what we see so clearly elsewhere. So that is the end of part one, maybe a little bit over time. But nevertheless, it's the end. And the next time I'm here, on the 20th, I believe, we will go on with the second part and finish it up. At that time, we'll go into the New Testament and explain those scriptures. And take a look at those scriptures where Jesus, very clearly in the beginning of the 14th, said, "With desire, I've desired to eat this Passover with you." So if the Passover was in the end of the 14th, why was Jesus saying what he said in the beginning of the 14th? There are some answers to that. So next time that I'm here, I will address that, and we will see at least two or three different ways to understand that passage.